Well, all right then. 5 p.m. on a Friday. Time for a new weekend. Quite specifically, time for American Hit Radio on 90.3 WHPC. I'm your host, Tom Ryan. Heidi Morales Ryan here as well, handling the engineering.
I'm working on it.
Running the board, taking care of things for us. We're getting knee-deep into a series that we just started about, well, exactly 3 weeks ago. This is our fourth show that we are dedicating to the early days of radio. We decided to hear that, you know, now that it's 2019, we're just about completing exactly 100 years of the existence of commercial radio, which is pretty remarkable. So with us doing this series of how music changed, picking some of the most important and vital things in the history of music, what is more important and vital than radio when it comes to the history of music? Now, of course, we focused an awful lot in the past on a variety of artists, a variety of record labels. We've done some artists, of course, that are contemporary, and we've done an awful lot of artists, at least just as many, I should say, that were back in the early days, even some that predated radio, some of our shows, going back to the late 1890s, before pre-1920, that's for sure. We did a good number on those. But here we are basically doing this series, and it gives us an opportunity, since we're discussing radio, of course, AM radio, because that's really the only radio that was existing on a commercial level, that would play music and that sort of thing commercially. And this gives us a chance to cover some of the artists that might have been overlooked in our series. So if this is part four, we're doing this chronologically. We started in 1920 because that is more or less the birth of commercial radio, which is why I'm saying it's the 100th anniversary for this medium. But we're moving chronologically through it, and we are right now up to the very end of 1929, which makes it a very crucial period of time for radio. It was late October of 1929 when the mood of the nation changed suddenly and drastically when the stock market crashed, which set into motion a financial depression that would have an enormous impact on day-to-day life in America, really in the world, for the next 10 years. The hardships that this incurred on almost every American inadvertently made radio more important than ever. First, you know, radio provided information and news to a population that was desperate for a solution to their problems. But more importantly, radio provided free entertainment for those who could afford little else. It provided solace and united our nation at a time of great difficulty. So picking up where we are, I'm going to start with a track that actually, it predates the Depression by just a bit. But post-October 1929, this song took on an entirely new meaning as it basically found a new birth and a new sense of popularity. The artist is Cliff Edwards. We played a track by him last week. That's the guy that was nicknamed Ukulele Ike. He was the voice of Pinocchio in the Disney movies. Here he is. As I said, this song had a completely different meaning, a very literal meaning, before October 1929, but it changed drastically at that point. The song is titled, "I Can't Give You Anything But Love."
But it's tough to be broke, kid. It's not a joke, kid. It's a curse. My luck is changing. It's gotten from simply rotten to something worse. Who knows, someday I will win too. I'll begin to reach my prime. Now, though I see what our end is, all I can spend is just my time. I can't give you anything but love, baby. That's the only thing I've plenty of, baby. dream a while, scheme a while, we're sure to find happiness. And I guess all those things you've always pined for. Gee, I'd like to see you looking swell, baby. Diamond bracelets, woolwork doesn't sell, baby. Till that lucky day, you know darn well, baby, I can't give you anything but love. I'd like to see you looking swell, baby. Diamond bracelets, woolwork doesn't sell, baby. Till that lucky day, you know darn well, baby, I can't give you anything but love.
Cliff Edwards, bringing us into the very end of the 20s and into an entirely new era for America. Now, when things got very bad, the 1932 presidential election was right around the corner, and everybody was looking to find a way out of the problems that they had. Franklin Delano Roosevelt was running for president, and around that time, somewhere during his campaign, this song was suggested for his campaign. It was a popular song sung by Lou Levin, who was a vocalist for Leo Reisman and his orchestra. And it had been popular for a while. It was actually used in a film in 1930 called Chasing Rainbows. It was the end of the film. And it was, again, it was pure escapism. If, you know, when things are bad, there's an awful lot of like absolutely joyous music that comes out of it. And this is one of those examples with Franklin Delano Roosevelt attempting to capture that as part of his campaigns to make the song itself a slogan for the times or for his own election called Happy Days Are Here Again.
Let us sing a song of cheer again.
getting a little bit political here, playing campaign songs. But, okay, now, I mean, you could just imagine, like, you know, just the mood of the nation, how, you know, 1 minute, everything seemed to be so celebratory. The jazz age almost instantly ended on that Friday. And
Black Friday.
Exactly. Now, a few of the things that were very interesting, like this next song that I'm going to play was a hit in 1930, but it's odd. But this is actually a song that dates all the way back to the turn of the century, actually 1902, when a student had heard a march that was written by somebody named Sprague. Yeah, Adelbert Sprague is the person who heard the march that was called Opie. And he wrote words to it, and he basically wrote a school song. And he brought it to his teacher when it was, because they were going to put on a show. And the teacher thought that the song was inappropriate because it was a drinking song. And that shouldn't have a drinking song to represent the University of Maine. But a different member of the faculty who was higher up heard the song and said, oh, it's fine, don't worry about it. But the problem was that this figured, I mean, it was questionable because Maine prohibited the manufacture and sale of liquor at that time, even before Prohibition. So they're saying, here we are, a university representing the state, and we're promoting drinking. They thought it was inappropriate. Now, it was very popular at the university, the university theme. It became their theme song. And it just so happened that Rudy Valley attended the University of Maine for a couple of years, and he heard the song and decided that he would want to do a recording of it. Now, of course, again, now it became controversial because it was a lot of people were saying that the song was in violation of the Volstead Act, Prohibition. So there was some controversy there saying you can't put out a song that's about drinking if it's illegal to sell alcohol in the United States. But it was so popular that and got so much radio play that there was a follow-up song that came out called I'd Like to Find the Guy Who Wrote the Stein Song, which, about somebody who was fed up with constantly hearing that song on the radio. So there you go. Here it is, Rudy Valley with the University of Maine Stein Song.
To the lips, to the eyes, to the girls who will love us someday. Oh,
fill the signs to dear old Maine. Shout till the rafters ring. Stand
the youth, to the fire, to the light that is moving and calling us, to the gods, to the fates, to the rulers of men and their destinies, to the lips, to the eyes, to the girls who will love us someday. Oh, Phil, the signs to dear old Maine, shout till the rafters ring. Slam and drink a toast once again, let every loyal Maine man sing. Then drink to all the happy hours, drink to the careless days, drink to Maine, our alma mater, the college of our hearts always.
There you have it.
Well, somebody was doing some drinking.
Yeah, I mean, it's so funny, isn't it, to think that at a time, especially in Maine, where they were pretty much anti-drinking before there was any national movement.
Right.
But it's definitely a drinking song and the University of Maine theme song. And it was a huge hit in the early 30s. Now, one name comes up if you're going to be talking about the first half of the 20th century, who was the single most popular artist. Well, it's an artist that we actually already covered. We did a good dozen or so shows dedicated to the music of Bing Crosby in this very series, and
yes,
the How Music Changed series. We completed 51 of our 250 intended topics. Bing Crosby being one of them. If you're interested in seeing some of those other topics that we've completed, by the way, check out our website, AmericanHitNetwork.com, or just search for American Hit Radio. It's so full of like shows and information. It's pretty amazing. I'm very, very proud of the website. The people who did the work on it did a fabulous job. And it actually was 15 years in the making, until I tell you the truth. So it's something worth seeing. But anyway, Bing Crosby was the number one artist of the first half of the 20th century, for sure. And I did say that we don't want to have to do too much coverage of artists that we're covering elsewhere, but it would be totally remiss if we didn't at least hit on some very obvious points and highlights of Bing's career. And this track coming out after the Depression, I think, is a very obvious result of the times and one way to address it. The song is called Wrap Your Troubles in Dreams on 90.3 WHPC.
What price happiness, what price happiness? Who can truthfully say? But for every share, with tears we pay. Love is happiness, I've had happiness. Ah, but it ended one day. Now I look at life a different way. When skies are cloudy and gray, they're only gray for a day. So wrap your troubles in dreams and dream your troubles away. Until that sunshine peeps through, there's only one thing to do. Wrap your troubles in dreams and dream your troubles away. Castles may tumble, that's fate after all. Life's really funny that way. No use to grumble, smile as they fall. Weren't you king for a day, say? Just remember that sunshine always follows the rain. And wrap your troubles in dreams, dream your troubles away. When skies are cloudy and gray, they're only gray for a day. With whistle and dream your cares away. Until that sunshine peeps through, there's only one thing to do. Whistle and dream your cares away. Your castles may tumble, that's fate after all. Life's really funny that way. No use to grumble, smile as they fall. Weren't you king for a day, say? Just remember, sunshine always follows the rain. Whistle and dream your cares away.
Definitely one of those singers that was able to benefit greatly from the invention of the ribbon microphone. Bing Crosby didn't have to worry about singing into a megaphone any longer and became the most popular vocalist of the first half of the 20th century. Well, escapist art was happening all over the place, film especially, but of course a lot of the films that were coming out around this time were musicals, and one of the biggest stars, who had just basically started her film career around this time, was Marlene Dietrich. Now, she starred as Lola in the film Blue Angel, and which got her a contract with Paramount Pictures. And this song was sung in the movie. It's actually a German song that, if you translate the German title literally, this song would be called I Am From Head to Toe Ready for Love. They changed the words in English into Falling in Love Again, Can't Help It. Here's Marlene Dietrich.
I often stop and wonder why I appeal to men. How many times I blunder in love and love again. They offer me devotion, I like it, I confess. When I reflect emotion, there's no need to guess. Falling in love again, never wanted to. What am I to do? I can't help it. Love's always been my game, play it how I may. I was made that way, I can't help it. Men clutter to me like moths around the flame, and if their wings burn, I know I'm not to blame. Falling in love again, never wanted to. What am I to do? I can't help it. Around the flame, as if their wings burn,
part of the escapist nature of what was happening. Of course, movies, especially musicals from the 30s, were providing entertainment that was helping people get their minds off of their troubles. And if you couldn't afford to go to the movies, which weren't very expensive back then, but expensive enough if you don't have anything, and you could still hear the songs on the radio. And a sort of like, I guess, a worldly sense was beginning to develop, because radio is now, I mean, a German-accented woman singing this song on your radio in middle America would have been extraordinary. It's something that would have been literally impossible just 10 years before. So from there, America starts to mythologize itself. We are beginning to get an idea of how big our country is and the different styles that are represented by the different parts of the country that we can now hear on the radio. And one of the people that absolutely and rather cleverly took advantage of that mythology is Gene Autry. Gene Autry, the singing cowboy, was so successful that in his time he owned a TV station, a whole bunch of radio stations. He eventually owned the California Angels for about something like almost 20 years. He's a member of the Country Music Hall of Fame, the Nashville Songwriters Hall of Fame. He was awarded stars on the Hollywood Walk of Fame 5 times. 5 different times on the Walk of Fame for...
That's insane.
He got one for film, he got one for his television work, he got one for his music, he got one for his radio work, and even live performance. Rather incredible. This song sold 5 million copies in its time, was featured in a whole bunch of Western films, and with Gene Autry playing the role of the singing cowboy, as I said, it mythologized the American West for the rest of us, and an entire generation, actually many generations, grew up dreaming of being cowboys, mostly because of Gene Autry, a country western performer, maybe the second most famous country western performer of his time after Jimmy Rogers. Here he is performing "That Silver-Haired Daddy of Mine."
In a vine-covered shack in the mountain, bravely fighting the battle of time, is a dear one who's weathered life's sorrows. 'Tis that silver-haired daddy of mine. If I could recall all the heartaches dear old daddy I caused you to bear, if I could erase those lines from your face and bring back the gold to your hair, if God would but grant me the power just to turn back the pages of time, I'd give all I own if I could but atone to that silver-haired daddy of mine. I know it's too late, dear old daddy, to repay for the sorrow and care, though dear mother is waiting in heaven just to comfort and solace you there. If I could recall all the heartaches dear old daddy I'd caused you to bear, if I could erase those lines from your face and bring back the gold to your hair, if God would but grant me the power just to turn back the pages of time, I'd give all I own if if I could but atone to that silver-haired daddy of mine.
Gene Autry, starting an entirely new impression of America for a lot of listeners. People who never before heard country music were beginning to hear it through the sheer populism of Gene Autry. Now, in New York, meanwhile, jazz is still in full swing. Just because everybody's a lot more poor doesn't mean that the bands are just going to dry up and go home. In fact, they were probably more popular than ever. And Cab Calloway was probably one of the most successful and famous, playing up mostly up at the Cotton Club in Harlem. That was pretty much his home club, so to speak. Now, he had some amazing people going through his band. I mean, from the early days until the present, he had people like Dizzy Gillespie in his band, Doc Cheatham, Ben Webster and Chu Berry, Milt Hinton on bass, some of the most renowned names in all of jazz. And he's also credited for inventing, which, or maybe not inventing, but popularizing the scat style of singing. I can't say he invented it because, I mean, it's something that Louis Armstrong did since the very first day he ever opened up his mouth. He'd be able to, you know, phrase and make things up as he was going along. But this was a more or less deliberate version of scat, where he would do a call and response thing and try to get the audience to repeat his phrasing, making it a little bit more complicated each time until eventually the place would just collapse and find it impossible to repeat what he did. It's a trick that you still see sometimes to this very day, but it really is almost 100 years old, or what is it? 90 years old anyway. This is perhaps the very first jazz record to sell a million copies. So here is Cab Calloway and his orchestra performing Minnie the Moocher on 90.3 WHPC.
Now here's a story about Minnie the Moocher. She was a red-hot hoochie-coocher. She was the roughest, toughest rail, but Minnie had a heart as big as a hay whale. Howdy, howdy, ho!
Howdy, howdy, ho!
Howdy, howdy,
ho! Howdy, howdy, ho!
She loved him though he was cocky. He took her down to Chinatown. He showed her how to kick the gong around.
Showed her how to kick the gong around.
He gave her things that she was needing. He gave her a home built of gold and steel, a diamond car with a platinum wheel. Whaddy woody way,
whaddy woody way.
Oh baby,
oh baby,
wanna be with you,
wanna be with you.
Howdy ho. Was a dozen courses. She had $1 million worth of nickels and dimes, and she sat around and counted them all a million times. Howdy, howdy,
howdy, howdy.
Oh, Minnie,
oh, Minnie.
jazz in New York around 1932. Cab Calloway and his orchestra performing Minnie the Moocher. Heidi and I are working our way through a series of shows we're calling Radio Days. We want to cover the most important aspects of radio broadcasting, music that was broadcast on the radio from its inception as a commercial entity in 1920 right up until 1954. That's what we're going to be doing. And this is our fourth show in the series. If you want to hear earlier shows, please, like I said, go to our website, American Hit Network, and they're all available for you to basically catch up on the series if you're interested. All right, we're talking about the combination of films and music and how they basically had a huge imprint on the times. A movie called Gold Diggers of 1933. This song was sort of a theme song, although it never was performed in full in the movie. But obviously the title Gold Diggers in itself, you know, alludes to the fact of money, discovering money at a time when money was scarce. And the song itself, in the lyrics, pretty much imagine that the Depression just suddenly ended and all of a sudden everybody is wealthy again. It's simply called We're in the Money, a.k.a. the Gold Digger Song, performed here by Fred Astaire.
Sunny, old man depression, you are through, you've done us wrong. We never see a headline about a breadline today. And when we see the landlord, we can look that guy right in the eye. We're in the money, come on my honey. Let's spend it, send it, lend it, rolling along.
Fred Astaire, of course, with We're in the Money. So, let's see, moving forward, we didn't really cover very many women from this era, and that needs to be fixed right now. Mildred Bailey, I didn't know this about her, I just found this out recently, that she was actually Native American. And she was involved in the music scene here, and she was like what you could consider to be one of the cooler, one of the hippest people of her time. She was a well-known performer and cool before Bing Crosby even. There was a movie about Bing Crosby's life, and I remember there were scenes that showed Mildred Bailey rolling into town and her meeting with a guy who was Bing Crosby's partner, which happened to be Mildred Bailey's brother, Al Rinker. And she was the woman that they looked up to. She was the hipster, the cool. She taught them who Louis Armstrong was. They never heard of Louis Armstrong. So Mildred Bailey was on the cutting edge at a time when, and knowledgeable of many things at a time when a lot of people were still beginning to catch up. And eventually, of course, Bing Crosby himself became very popular, and it was Bing Crosby who returned the favor to Mildred Bailey by introducing her to Paul Whiteman, which is how, when she became the singer of the Paul Whiteman Orchestra, that was a big deal. Now, she went on to record any number of hit singles, a huge numbers of them, and she had a whole bunch of nicknames. She was the Queen of Swing, Mrs. Swing, but she was also known as the Rockin' Chair Lady because she had a radio show, and Rockin' Chair was her theme song. And it, of course, was hugely popular because you'd hear it every single time she would open up her show. So here is... Oh, I should also mention that most of the versions up until this point also were instrumental. So it was Mildred Bailey who gave the song a lot of personality by bringing the words to the forefront. Here is her version, then, of Rockin' Chair. Mildred Bailey singing the song that was eventually adapted as her theme song, Rockin' Chair. Now, this next artist is Russ Colombo. I'm picking him because he was hugely popular for a short amount of time. One of the like romantic singers, I suppose you could say. And a renowned songwriter. He's the guy that wrote Prisoner of Love, for example, and Too Beautiful for Words. I wanted to play this song by Russ, basically just to tell the story of his life, of his short life, that I don't think many people know. First of all, he was the 12th child of Italian immigrants. Around this point in time, I mean, my dad was one of 15, so it's not all that uncommon. But imagine a time when families were that huge. Now, Columbo was coming out of Camden, New Jersey, and he said eventually, as I said, grew up, you know, as a member of Gus Arnheim and his orchestra, became hugely popular. Sort of like, like I said, what's the word when you have like, today would be like almost like a teeny bopper idol, that sort of thing. But he became incredibly popular. And at the peak of his popularity, he was at the house of his friend, Lansing Brown, the famous photographer. And Brown had a collection of guns, and they were basically what Brown was showing Columbo his collection. And this is Lansing Brown's own words. "I was absent-mindedly fooling around with one of the guns. It was a dueling design and works with a cap and a trigger. I was pulling back the trigger and clicking it time after time. I had a match in my hand, and when I clicked, apparently the match caught in between the hammer and the firing pin. There was an explosion, and then Russ slid to the side of his chair. Apparently, the ball from the gun ricocheted off of a table and hit Columbo above the left eye. He was brought to Good Samaritan Hospital, and they tried to remove the ball from his brain, but he died within 6 hours of the accidental shooting. They had to keep the news from his mother, who had suffered a heart attack, and she died not ever knowing, 10 years later, not ever knowing that her son had been accidentally killed. They managed to basically, they wrote fake letters to her from him, and they found old tapes from radio shows to basically make it seem as though he was still alive and recording on the radio, all basically to keep the news from his mother.
Oh my goodness.
Isn't that amazing? Here is Russ Columbo singing one of his big hits from the early 30s, a song called Paradise.
We live and love, our day is through, but each night in dreams, it started anew. She comes to me as she used to do, my love. And then she holds my hand, ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba. And then I understand. Her eyes are fire with one desire, that a heavenly kiss. Could I resist? And then I dim the light.
Parada.
How many cartoons have we seen in our day that they imitated the likes of Russ Columbo? Boo, 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 boo. All right, well, we'll wrap it up now. Well, I've got another track that I want to play, which features Bing Crosby. He's singing with the Mills Brothers, who probably the single most successful vocal group of this era. Oh, my goodness. I mean, their career starts around here, in around the early 30s, and it'll follow us right through the entire series up until 1954. So we will be hearing more of them as we work our way through this series, Radio Days. But here is Bing and the Mills Brothers performing Dinah. And with the time that's left, we'll go out with Ted Lewis and his band singing In a Shanty, in Old Shanty Town, just to stay in with the theme of what was happening during the Depression era. Take care, everybody. Have a wonderful weekend. It's going to be beautiful tomorrow, so enjoy. I'll see you next week.
Dinah, is there anyone fine in the state of Carolina? If there is and you know her, show her to me. Dinah, got those Dixie eyes blazing, how I love to sit and gaze to the eyes of Dinah Lee. Every night, why do I shake with pride? 'Cause my dynamite change your mind about me. Oh, Dinah, should you wander to China, I would hop an ocean liner just to be with Dinah Lee.
Dinah, is there anyone finer in the state of Carolina? If there is, and you know it, show to me. Dinah, where the Dixie eyes blazing, I would love sitting gazing to the eyes of Dinah Lee. My Dinah, every night, why should I shake with fright? Because my dynamite change your mind about me. Dinah, if you wanted to China, I would hop an ocean liner
every night, why do I shake with pride? 'Cause my dynamite changed your mind about me.
The name of this song is Dinah.
Said it.
The name of this song is Dinah.
Snaggy.
The name of this song is Dinah.
Oh, tell it.
The name of this song is Dinah.
Dinah, wandered to China, state of Carolina. There is a inn you know where I would like to have you. Show it to me, Dinah. It's got those Dixie eyes blazing. I would love to sit and gaze in to the eyes of Dinah Lee. Oh, Dinah, should you wander to China, would give me an ocean liner just to be with Dinah Lee.
Thank you.
time up in the world. But I want to tell you, folks, that I'd give the whole world to be back, way, way back where I used to be. You know, it's a heavenly nest. That's where I rest the best. And it means more than the world to me. Oh, say, it's only a little shanty, a shanty in old shanty town. Why, the roof, it's so slanty, it nearly touches the ground. That tumble-down shack by an old railroad track, like a millionaire's mansion, it's calling me back. Oh, say, I'd give up a palace, if I were a king. Why, to me, it's more than a palace, folks. It's my life, it's my everything. And there's a queen waiting there, a queen, I tell you, with a silvery crown. In a little shanty in shanty town. And I played with the big stars, down east and out west. And I've lived, and yes, lived like the big stars. And I've mixed with the best. But you can turn out those lights, turn them out, I tell you, and take my name down, and you'll be welcome in my little shanty, in old shanty town. Yes, sir.